The following message was recorded at the 2011 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
Your time to come and listen to this topic. I appreciate it. I salute you. And thank you for those of you who participated one level or another in Love and Respect message. And male and female communication is the topic. And I love to listen in on how men and women speak. And I've been married since 1973. I met my wife at Wheaton College and proposed to her. And we have three adult children. And but so this has been a personal experience. And, of course, I know it is to you as well. But I listen in sometimes. And a wife says, I have nothing to wear. Right? What she means is she has nothing new. Right? Her husband says, I have nothing to wear. What he means is he has nothing clean. Now, I love that illustration because it brings home a simple point. We can say the same things but mean something totally different. I have nothing to wear.
I have nothing to wear.
Same sentence. Same exact set of words. I have nothing to wear.
I have nothing to wear.
We say the same thing, but we mean something totally different. And this can be rooted in the fact that we're male and female. Some of it's just basic communication stuff, but some of it tends to be related to how we are as male and female. And Christ asked this question in Matthew 19, have you not read, you made them from the beginning, made them male and female. And I liken it to the fact that God designed us differently. You know, women look at the world through pink sunglasses, and it colors what she sees. She has pink hearing aids, and it affects what she hears. And she speaks through a pink megaphone, and she expects everybody to know what she means by what she says, because all of her girlfriends know what she means by what she says. She says, I have nothing to wear. They say, oh, sweetie, we don't have anything new either, but we're going shopping later. And they all just kind of know. We, on the other hand, as men, have blue sunglasses, and it colors what we see. And we have blue hearing aids, and it affects what we hear, and we speak through a blue megaphone, and we expect everybody to know what we mean by what we say, because all our buddies do. We say, I don't have anything to wear. Our buddy says, she ain't doing your laundry either. Just a joke, said among women, because you get bananas thrown at that point. But this dynamic is interesting. Now, there can be honest differences between us, as different as pink is from blue. And it's interesting that at the University of Washington, they studied 2,000 couples for 20 years, a longitudinal study rooted in observational interaction, observing how they interacted, and had this love laboratory. And great research came out of that. And I found it intriguing that they said, we now know that there are two key ingredients that must be present for a relationship to succeed. And when those two are there, the relationship, in all likelihood, although there's never any dogmatic, absolute kind of statement, but on a bell curve, when you do statistical analysis in that sense, it's pretty predictive that this relationship is going to succeed, though you can't predict it absolutely. And when those two things are not present, the relationship is going to struggle. And what was intriguing is, they said these two key ingredients are present no matter how old or young the couple may be, how rich or poor, what kind of fighting style there is, what we call the volatile couples versus the avoidant couples. Most are avoidant. They avoid conflict. Some are volatile. But they discovered volatility did not show that the relationship was a bad one, because sometimes people are having a doozy of a fight on Tuesday night, but they're dancing in a square dancing thing on Wednesday night. They're in a Bible study Thursday night, they go to church Saturday night, and they're golfing with their friends, you know, sometime, and they're laughing, carrying on, but then they have one huge fight. But the deal is they're making more positive deposits than they are withdrawals. But if you take snapshots of them at the time of volatility, many professional counselors thought volatility is an indication of a problem, but that did not prove to be the case in research. Doesn't justify volatility, and we certainly don't mean violence by volatility, but we mean kind of the Italian or whatever, you know, the German, whatever ethnic group we want to kind of talk about in terms of this expressive whatever. But some of the avoidants who thought they were making a real contribution to the relationship by avoiding conflict were certainly not making a huge withdrawal at that point, but they weren't making any deposits. And so once a year they had this huge blow up, and of course the withdrawal was larger than any of the deposits they made, and then they wondered why they bankrupt their relationship. So, but regardless, they got into style at the University of Washington and said, you know what, at the end of the day, it doesn't make any difference what the style is, it doesn't make any difference how old, how young, rich or poor, how many children, where you live. It came down to two key words, love and respect. And they said when love and respect is present in a relationship, that relationship succeeds. And when love and respect is not present, it doesn't succeed. But then I wanted to tease this out, because I have a PhD in family-related studies, so we're always doing research. And so we've asked, I wanted to see if there was a male and female difference on this, a male and female difference in terms of love and respect. And I want to ask this question of you. Don't answer it. Just answer it in your own heart. But I wanted to see. So we've asked 7,000 people this question so far. We do survey work. This is anecdotal stuff. We would do, if I show of hands, that's not a good sampling. But we got hard data, objective data. 7,000 people we've asked this question. When you're in a conflict with your spouse or significant other, do you feel unloved at that moment or disrespected? Now, in your own heart of hearts, how would you answer that in your own maleness, in the case that we're all men here? So do you feel during conflict with your wife, or if you're in a dating relationship, do you feel during that conflict unloved at that moment or disrespected? That's an interesting question. So far, of these 7,000 people, 83% of the men have said what? That's exactly right. And 72% of the women have said they feel unloved. That is as different as pink is from blue, as male is from female. In fact, when you put pink and blue together, what color do you get? Purple, the color of royalty, the color of God. God created us, male and female, to come together as husband and wife. And when we come together in that oneness, pink and blue, God's not pink in that sense, God's not blue. When pink comes together with blue, it forms purple. And together we reflect his image on earth. And those of you who understand the gift of celibacy or being a eunuch for the kingdom, Paul talks about this as a gift. It's a grace that's given to a single person. It's what I call a compensatory gift. It gives them a special grace so that as an individual they can reflect the image of God on earth without being married. Those of us who don't have that gift, then we reflect the full image of God in our marriage. The potential is there. One of my burdens is that the culture should be seeing us in our relationships and wanting, they should hear the music and ask to know the words. But with our high divorce rate and the things that are going on, you know, in some ways we're like bald-headed men selling hair restoration oil. But the challenge is there for all of us to really think this through. But the potential to make impact on our children, on our family, on our friends, is in that marital relationship. And I think the enemy is attacking us and discouraging us greatly. And I also think we've shamed you men, and I'm going to comment on that in just a moment. We've tried to motivate men in ways that shame them. A person once asked me, Pastor Emerson, when you gave your Father's Day message, what was that like? And when you gave your Mother's Day message, what was that like? And I said, I know where that's going. And I said, that's very insightful. I affirmed the mothers, and I kicked butt with the dads. And I said, men are tired. Some of the movements that we had out there, you can't keep clubbing guys up against the head and expect them to be motivated. No great leader motivates men through shame. Men don't give themselves, throwing themselves on a hand grenade because they're around men who shame them all the time. There's something that's very deep here, and it's related to this issue of respect. Here, Shawnee Feldhahn, who's a friend, she's a researcher, great writer and editorialist, but she's written a lot of stuff, but she and I had connected several years back, and she said, I want to do this random sample of the American male, and there's a survey group called Decision Analysts out of Houston, and they're going to help me come up with a sampling, she said, of 400 American males that represent the American male. And she said, there's a secular group, but she said, Emerson, what would you like to ask by way of a question? I said, well, that question there, that if you're in a conflict with your spouse or significant other, do you feel unloved or disrespected? And they were blown away by the results of this, blown away when you know the politically correct answer isn't that, because I'll explain to you in just a moment why that's not popular. But she said, Emerson, what about if I ask this question? Because she said, this question was asked to me when I was in a college youth group, and the youth pastor, a college pastor, asked this question of all of us, and I'd like to ask this question again, because when I heard that question then and heard the difference between men and women, it blew me away. And I said, well, what is it? She said, here's the question I'd like to ask, and I affirmed this. Would you men rather be left alone and unloved in the world, or would you rather be viewed as inadequate and disrespected by everyone? Again, would you men rather be left alone and unloved in the world, or viewed as inadequate and disrespected by everyone? Alone and is it 74% of the men said they'd rather be left alone and unloved in the world in this politically correct culture where it's all about love. And particularly because when you talk about respect, there's an interesting response to that. In fact, what's so exciting to me, and this is why I launched Love and Respect, is I didn't know all the research that was out there. There's not a lot of research, but the research that's out there is very good research. But the reason that some of this prompted these questions that I asked is that as a pastor, I knew the greatest treatise in the New Testament was Ephesians 5, dealing with marriage, the greatest treatise on marriage in the New Testament, Ephesians 5. And verse 33 is the summary statement to that. And as I looked at that summary statement, I realized, wow, this may be God's last word of the church on marriage, and it's pretty simple. You know, my dad was dying, and he was on his deathbed. He said, Emerson, son, come close, listen to me. I need to say something to you. And if I'm in that room alone, and my dad's cognizant, he's in his right mind, you know that whatever my dad's about to say to me will be the most important words he's ever spoken. The last words a person speaks are the most important words. That's kind of a universal consensus. Whatever he's going to say, he intends for it to come deep from his soul, and he intends for it to go deep into my soul. The last words a person spoke. Well, Abba Father is not dying, but it's as though he's spoken his last words to the church. And what are they? In terms of progressive revelation, we say not necessarily chronology. The book of Ephesians isn't the last of all the epistles written, but every theologian says this seems to be the climax. This is the pinnacle. What is it? Here it is. That a husband must love his wife, and a wife must respect her husband. Wow. That's gender specific. And then I realized Peter said in 1 Peter 3 to the wives, 1 Peter 3, verse 1 and 2, the wives apparently said to Peter, my husband's disobedient to the word. So he could have been a carnal Christian or unbeliever. He doesn't identify him as an unbeliever. Just said he's disobedient to the word. So he probably, economy of words on parchment, probably had, he can be a carnal Christian or an unbeliever. The way you win him, you can win your disobedient husband, and he says in verse 2, by respectful behavior. I thought, this is unbelievable. And then I began to realize in that Ephesians passage that a husband must love his wife. The Greek word there is agape love. There are three Greek words that describe kind of marital love. Agape love, unconditional. Then phileo, Philadelphia, brotherly friendship love. You see that used in Titus 2. The older women are to encourage younger women to love their husbands and love their children. But that's phileo. So they are to phileo their husbands. Not fillet their husbands. And then you have eros, you know, the erotic. But what's interesting, no wife in the domestic portions of Scripture, the marital passages, is commanded to agape love her husband. Thinking, wow, what's the significance of that? And then I realized Paul penned 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, the greatest piece of literature in all of literature on love, 1 Corinthians 13. The one who penned it, the love chapter, never commands a wife to agape love her husband. And then I thought of Peter who walked with the Lord of love. Can you imagine what Peter realized after 3 years? Jesus is dead, resurrected, then ascends into heaven. Then he realized this is the incarnate one. Abba, indwelt. Well, when I looked into the eyes of Jesus, I saw God, I saw Father, I saw love itself. God is love. I mean, reflecting on the eyes of Jesus, seeing, looking into the eyes and realizing I was looking into the eyes of God. The epitome of love. But that Peter, who walked with the Lord of love for 3 years, never commands a wife to agape love her husband. I'm thinking, this is interesting. As a pastor who had the privilege of studying the Bible 30 hours a week for nearly 20 years, it took me a little while to figure some things out. But when I saw this, I began to think, there's something here. There's a secret that's almost hidden in plain sight. But as I got into this, I suddenly realized there's some huge landmines. I said, a husband must love his wife, and a wife must respect her husband. Women said, well, Dr. Emerson, I have to be honest with you. I don't feel any respect for him. And it would be hypocritical for me to show respect when I don't feel it. Because he hasn't loved me in meaningful ways. And he hasn't earned it. And everybody knows that you've got to earn respect. He doesn't deserve it. And I I think the dictionary definition of respect is you show respect to your superiors. He's not superior to me. We're equal in Christ. I'm not inferior to him, and I'm not going to be treated like a doormat. And I have to tell you, I think I know where you're going with this. You really want me to fear his dominance. You want women to fear male dominance. You want to return us to patriarchy. I know that's what your agenda is, and we're just not going to do that. That set the feminist movement back 75 years. And you know what? I have to be really honest with you. It's all about his narcissism. It's all about his ego, and I'm not going to feed that. And I'm not going to subject myself to emotional abuse. But other than these things, I am really open to hearing what you have to say about this. And in our conference, and we're going to be here in April on this, I say to all who are present, women as well, and I go through this because women just say, you just described what I feel. And I said, well, every one of those is a landmine that I stood on because I suddenly had this pushback. It was so overwhelming to me. See, every man here serves and dies for honor. And strong male leaders motivate other men to give their very lives. And we don't do it because we somehow want him to fear our dominance, or we're respecting him because we fear his dominance, or we see him as superior. We give honor and respect to one another because we understand what motivates us, what energizes us. And so there are voices in the culture that have completely turned it around and interpreting your spirit through a pink grid. You are being interpreted through the female grid. Because the voice of intimacy and the culture of intimacy has been taken over by pink. And no one lacks goodwill. Everyone is good-willed. And there are intellectual women out there full of goodwill. They're better people than I am. It has nothing to do with impugning motives. It's just a matter of recognizing that people see things through a certain grid. But I always ask the women at the conference and husbands, how many of you have sons? How many of you here have sons here? Okay. I share this, and this is when the light bulb comes on for your wives. That mantra that I just sang is going to be the attitude your sweet daughter-in-law has toward your precious baby boy. And when the wives hear this, it's like they have a light bulb moment. No way. She better not have that attitude for... And I said, why? Because he'll shut down. He'll just shut down. I mean, that'd kill him. And then she suddenly realizes you're a son. And it revolutionizes relationships. It's just been stunning to me. But as I got into this, I began to realize, whoa, and women are not mean-spirited. Women are always wanting to improve their relationship. And women come up to me and say, why hasn't anybody told us this? Because we listen to Hollywood, not the Holy Word. We've got to come to a point as Christians where we, as Abba said, listen to me, church. Listen to me. Come close. And what's interesting is that research has pointed out that when this conflict happens, where he generally is feeling disrespected, she's feeling unloved. Now, it's very important that we all need love and respect equally. Very important to understand that. And if you happen to need love, you're not necessarily something wrong with you. But typically, when men want love, they're still in the courtship stage or they're pre-courtship. We all want love and we seek love. But once we get into marriage, that changes. And I'll explain that in just a moment. The second caveat would be a man who's in a relationship where his wife has just told him she doesn't love him. That is a serious situation to be in. The reason for that is that when I prayed over this, I said, Lord, why have you commanded husbands to agape love and not the wives in the area of the domestic portions? I mean, all women are to agape love in the generic sense, but Lord, what is this? And why do you command her to phileo there but not agape love? And then as I was praying over this, there was this inaudible voice that said, I put it within the nature of a woman to nurture. Women love to love. You have to wound a woman at the level of intimacy to get her to stop loving. And I'm not going to command her to do what I created her to do because I'm not into redundancy. It's within the nature of a woman to love. And I will say at our conference, you women, listen to how many times you say the word love in a day when you're saying goodbye to a girlfriend, bye to your daughter, bye to your mother, bye to your husband. You're writing a letter. You know, listen to what you say. You said, love you, bye, love you at church. Love you, love you, love you. Call me, love you, love, 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 love. It just doesn't stop. And women just start laughing because they suddenly see themselves. So God has put that within the nature. Again, we're looking at the bell curve. There's no dogmatic statement here. in terms of, you know, absolute everyone all the time. No, but bell curve, it's so huge that one has to take a look at this. And as I then began to get into this, I began to realize, well, why is it then that men begin to feel disrespected and women, you know, are feeling unloved? Because she's loving by nature. So that first year of marriage, guess who fails to love as she loves? You and me. There's a discrepancy. We're not as sensitive or sentimental. So what happens, she gets hurt. We're not trying to hurt her, but we end up hurting. We've all done this dance. So now she kind of appeals to us to change, but we don't change to the extent or as quickly as she would want us to, and she can't get that because she would in this area of love. And so now you say to, you think of even the Titus passage where the older women are to encourage the younger women to phileo their husbands and phileo their children. Why phileo? Because a negativity and unfriendliness sets in. But no one in the family unit doubts that she agape loves. You say to the kids, does your mommy love you? Oh, yeah, she loves us a lot. Does she like you? No, not right now. We've been bad. We're in time out. Hey, Harry.
Yeah?
Does your wife love you?
Oh, yeah.
Does she like you?
No. Not today. Now that I think of it, she didn't like me yesterday either.
Most every man here knows his wife loves him, but isn't sure that she likes him. I was on the Morning Blend show yesterday, and two gals that interviewed me, they said, oh, they were just, yeah, that's exactly, I've heard that. That's what my boyfriend has said. He knows that I love him, but doesn't know if I like him. Yeah. I mean, every woman hears this. They know this language. It happens again and again and again, you know. Or it meant, you know, I don't deserve this disrespect. Everybody respects me but you. And see, respect is a marginal issue to women. It's not a major issue. If we just love one another, we'll all be happy. And it's the way God has made her. So as I got into this, I began to realize, whoa, this is interesting. So during conflict, he leans toward this side, she leans toward that side. And then I suddenly realized, well, why would God command me to love? Well, we've already established it. I don't love by nature like Sarah loves. My wife, I've been married since 1973. So I don't love as naturally as Sarah. If that's not the case, then why am I commanded to love? It would be a moot command. They would be irrelevant. But God commands me to put on agape love toward my wife because apparently I don't do that as naturally as I should. She's not going to love perfectly, and I don't do things unnaturally as unloving as I could perhaps. But the point is, generally speaking, the Lord said, Emerson, you're under divine command, son, because you don't love as naturally as Sarah loves. And I'm not going to command her to do what I designed her to do. Okay? Well, then, why would God command a woman to respect? Whoa. Every one of us here as men live by the honor code. It's within our nature. We need to understand that we give other men honor, even if we don't want to. Because here's the deal. You show dishonor to another man, and what could happen? We are warriors. We understand instinctively that you don't diss another man consciously, willfully, especially in certain areas at certain times. You just don't. You don't violate the honor code, and when you violate the honor code, your days are numbered in your job. If you dishonor your boss, it's over with. You just don't go there. I've had women dishonor their bosses when they've had all these men around, and then she gets excluded from that inner circle, and she thinks it's a glass ceiling. And I said, no, when you spoke that way, all those men under the table were white-knuckling it. They wouldn't dare talk that way, or they'd know their days are numbered. You're undermining trust when you do that. He doesn't know if he can trust you now. Why would you send a message of dishonor? Debate the issue, yes, but don't dishonor me. And debate the issue honorably. So apparently God isn't going to command me to do that same Greek word that he would with Sarah. Why? Because it's within my nature. Why would he make me put me under divine command to do that in a sense? So as I've got into this, I realized, well, whoa, then apparently Sarah, it's very natural for her to be disrespectful at the level of intimacy. And as I got into this, then God commands me to love because I don't love naturally, but he doesn't command me to respect because I tend to live by the honor code. He doesn't command Sarah to love because she does that more naturally, but she doesn't respect naturally. And in fact, then I saw this love and respect connection. When Sarah feels unloved, she's hurt. So what happens? It's very natural for her to react disrespectfully to me. When I feel disrespected, I can't believe that she would say that. No one talks to me this way. Right? I've said to women, After you've had a doozy of a fight with your husband, go back into the bathroom in a floor-length mirror and reenact the same way you said it to him. The researchers at the University of Washington found this, that when women are very upset with their husbands, their eyes darken, the face turns sour, the hand on the hip, the scolding motherly finger, she will roll her eyes, she will she'll throw the head back, and when estrogen kicks in, the word choice of contempt is incredible. And I'll defend her in just a moment, but right now I'm describing. I would be defending her much quicker than I normally would if she were here. But but I say to them, go and reenact that, and don't hold anything back. And then ask yourself, is there any person in his life who talks to him this way? If the answer to that question is no, then he's not hearing the deeper cry of your heart. He's thinking. You can dismiss him as childish, as egotistical, as narcissistic, as whatever you want to do. You can do the same thing toward your precious baby boy. Or you can begin to think, you know what? Maybe he's not hearing what I'm saying because of the way I'm saying it. And could he, in fact, be thinking that I'm using this topic as another opportunity to send the message that I really don't like who he is as a human being? And so he's confused. Because he doesn't think that the punishment fits the crime. It doesn't seem, this is overkill. Why are you so upset over this? Particularly if it's a preference issue. Now, I'm not talking about evil stuff. I saw my dad attempt to strangle my mother to death. That's not my frame of reference. So let's work with one another. We're talking about the daily dance where we have differing preferences. We're stepping on each other's air hose, but we're good-willed people. We didn't marry Hitler's distant cousin. Okay. I think. So here you have this command where Sarah is to put on respect. Why? Because apparently then, here's the deal. When I feel disrespected, I can't believe that you talked to me this way. I end up reacting in ways that feels unloving to Sarah. And maybe that's why God commands us at that point. He commands me to love because I'm going to be unloving when I feel disrespected. Why does he command Sarah to respect? Because she's going to be very disrespectful when she feels unloved. And guess what? The first year of marriage and on, he's going to be less loving. So you're going to get on what I call a crazy cycle if you don't come to grips with this reality. What's the crazy cycle? Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love. Then without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love. Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, and this baby starts to spin, and it gets crazy. And I call it the crazy cycle. And here's the deal. It happens with people of goodwill. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7:33 and 34, the husband is concerned about how to please his wife, and the wife is concerned about how to please her husband. And he penned Romans, the great treatise on the total depravity of the human soul and condition, that we all need the Savior, that we can't be good enough to earn salvation. But the one who penned that never said that because we are totally depraved in the sense that there's nothing we can do to save ourselves doesn't mean that we act that way 100% of the time. That we're created in the image of God and we can reflect the image of God. We just can't reflect it enough to merit God's acceptance. But it doesn't mean that that residual effect disappears. And that in marriage, he is saying there's basic goodwill. Even Jesus said to the disciples, your spirit's willing, but the flesh is weak. So there is a good intent. In other words, your wife does not get up early in the morning to think of ways to show you disrespect. But at the end of the day, you feel disrespected. You don't get up early in the morning thinking, how can I be unloving today? But at the end of the day, she can feel unloved. Now, agreed, there are moments when we all get nasty. Sarah and I get nasty. We want to get nasty. She'll even chase me around the house with my book. What would you say to someone who is treating their wife the way that you're treating? It's true. And she knows that I know about stonewalling. And I just say, I want to stonewall right now. I don't want to be loving right now. So there are going to be moments, but we kind of have this dance. We have a twinkle in our eye, but we kind of know But I understand stubbornness and nastiness. I'm not talking, we can take a snapshot and incriminate anybody. We're looking at the movie of your relationship. So we don't let snapshots be taken and put it in the front page of a paper because it can be slander, it can be liable. And so we don't let that happen. We don't let images misrepresent the character of a person. But today in the church, unfortunately, just one person gives the report of a snapshot and the person is dead in the water. Your son will be dead in the water because he will be labeled as emotionally and verbally abusive. That's the line. It's the new doctrine. All it has to do is be dropped in a women's group and your son is dead. And here's the deal. As I pointed out, 85% of those who, if I didn't, I'll point out now, what they did at the University of Washington discovered that when we get on this dance, so to speak, although they didn't talk about it as the crazy cycle, there is this reality that when there's conflict, 85% of those who stonewall are men. Now, my mom stonewalled, my dad stonewalled, but when a woman stonewalls, usually the reason. Women want to connect. They don't want to stonewall, but they're afraid of what that man's going to do with their emotions. But generally speaking, among the goodwill, 85% of those who stonewall are men. So during that tension, the tendency for us is to withdraw. Why? Because they've recognized when our heartbeats get to 100 beats per minute, when we're feeling provoked, and our wife is coming at us with that, all just we go into warrior mode. We don't want to go into warrior mode. So what do we seek to do? The respectful, honorable thing. We want to de-escalate this. We don't want to be provoked. We don't want this to be a fight that's being picked. We just want to say, leave me alone. Drop it. Forget it. And we try to exit. Of course, she chases us. Or at least she used to. When she stops chasing, you have a problem. But we do the respectful thing. Because if Brian and I were best of buddies since boyhood, and we get into a heated argument. At a certain point, we're just going to say, drop it, forget it. You know, we're going to separate. Why? Because we're warriors. If you get too upset with one another, we're going to start throwing fists, and we don't see this as abuse. That's just, we play football. We, you know, everything, it is abuse. Toward a wife, absolutely unequivocally. Some guys, well, Brian, you brought it on yourself. Emerson told you to back off. I mean, you can get up off the ground, Brian. So we know that. So we do the honorable thing. Drop it. Forget it. Let's just drop it. Okay? But in a woman's world, that's labeled unloving. See, because the researchers pointed out that women, when that kind of thing happens, they can't disconnect. They don't want to disconnect. Not very long. So they move toward the husband. As I say, they confront to connect. Of course, when they confront to connect, they are in that negative state, and it feels like they confront to control. But she's actually confronting to connect. So here you have this interesting dynamic. In fact, the researchers found out that women will become critical and complain. They'll criticize and complain. That's what she does. In fact, as I point out, if you look at how women are with one another, they'll be best of friends, and they're doing something, and suddenly there's a flare-up. They'll separate for a little bit, and then they come back, and both will ventilate. And what's interesting, watch them. They can both talk and listen at the same time. Just amazing. It's stunning. Watch what, it's just amazing. And then they'll spew it all out, and then one will say, well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Well, no, I'm really sorry, I shouldn't have said what I did. Well, will you forgive me what I said? Yeah, I forgive you, but will you forgive me? Yes, I do. Then they'll hug. And then they wipe away their tears. Then one tends to be the witty one. So she'll say something silly, and the other throws their head back with laughter. They'll continue to wipe away the tears, then they'll resume their activity. And it's what I call it, they bring it full circle. You know, there's some activity, conflict, momentary separation, come back, ventilation, I'm sorry, will you forgive me, yes, yes, hug, wipe away tears, laughter, wit, and resume the activity until tomorrow when they do it again. And the researchers at the University of Washington called that the ocean of emotion. And women feel very comfortable in the ocean of emotion. That dance is not uncomfortable to them. They actually see it as leading to love and resolving the issue and reconciling. They feel highly motivated by that. They feel positive about that. And it looks like they're out of control and their blood pressure would be at 100 beats per minute, but it's not. And in marriage, if a man just said, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? She immediately softened and said, well, it's me. It was more me. I was bad. I was nasty. Please forgive me. I mean, it's just the way it is. But we don't get that way because halfway through the thing, we say, drop it, forget it. So we seek to do the respectful thing only to be labeled unloving. She seeks to do the loving thing, and you label her as disrespectful. And you're sick and tired. Does this make sense? We all live here. You need to be encouraged. It's not just your woman that's got a problem. My dad thought my mom had a problem. And then my whole family came to Christ my freshman year at Wheaton. My mom came to Christ, my sister, then my dad, my brother-in-law was a professor. They all bowed the knee to Christ, and the family unit changed. And dad, you know, realized, just the way in which he was misinterpreting. Mom, and here's the deal, see, without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love. Here was the deal. Mom was crying out for love. I'm feeling unloved, and I'm reacting this way because I have a need that only you can meet. You're the only man in my world that can meet this kind of love. And I'm insecure because something happened, and so I'm moving towards you, but you're not awakening to my soft voice or my quietness. You're not getting it, so I'm going to up the ante because somehow I know that when I come across disrespectfully, you look at me. And I say to him, you're winning the battle, ladies, but you're going to lose the war because you're killing him. Yeah, well, he tears up. Yeah, because he's dying when you use disrespect. But that's a different point. So I say to men, look, you say, I am tired of this. Because here, without love, though, defensively, she reacts offensively without respect. And some of you men have said, she's offensive, she's disrespectful, and I'm tired of this negative reaction. I'm sick of it. I don't want to hear it anymore, woman. My dad, done with it. And he missed my mom's heart. And they divorced when I was one. They remarried one another. Then they're separated for 6 years. And I wet the bed until I was 11. Not that you needed to know that information. But I was there. I cried myself to sleep many a night. They eventually sent me to a military school at age 13. And I was at Missouri Military Academy from age 13 to 18 because of the family conflicts. And I think that was an act of grace because I don't know what I would have done to my dad. But my dad eventually got it, that mom was a good-willed woman who was seeking reassurance. But mom contributed to the problem because she was a very successful woman and she could say things. And it just they got on this crazy cycle. Two good-willed people. But see, here's the deal. My dad took up offense over this disrespect and so on and so forth, but mom wasn't trying to be disrespectful. And your wife is not trying to be disrespectful. At the end of the day, Sarah, my wife, is not trying to be disrespectful. However, she's coming across with the dark eyes, it's difficult. So can I decode at that moment that she's a good-willed woman who's seeking reassurance that I love her, or am I going to take up offense over what I perceive to be as disrespect? And that becomes the critical point. And without respect, I say to women, defensively, he reacts offensively without love. And women get together in their pink huddles and talk about male behavior, and all of their experience is the same. So groupthink sets in, and they're absolutely convinced men have serious problems until I talk to them about their baby boy. But until that happens, they're absolutely convinced there's something seriously wrong. And the culture reinforces that. The church has reinforced that. And as I said before, we've shown you disrespect to motivate you to be loving. And I say to women, how motivated will you be to show respect if we are hostile and unloving toward you? You cannot motivate men to change by shaming them. And men, I apologize. We have failed you. And some of you think there's something seriously wrong with you because you're not pink. And then some of you become pink, trying to imitate all of that, and women reject you. Because they don't want pink at the end of the day. We have really done some smart things to ourselves. So as we look at this, what I will say to the wife at the conference is that your husband would die for you. If a burglar came into the house, your husband would attempt to save your life. In fact, I always say this at all the conferences. A husband and wife are in the home, three children. Murderer comes in, says one of you must die, the rest of you get to go free. Given that that statement's true, and he's not lying, given that's true and given all things are equal, like the wife doesn't have cancer and is going to die tomorrow, given that all things are equal, who dies? The husband. And I always say, we don't want to die. This isn't some, oh, great, this is the day I get to die. That's not the point. The point is men feel a responsibility, and that sense of responsibility has been somehow interpreted to mean that he lives with this attitude and it's his right to dominate. No, he's independent, and he feels the responsibility to die like Christ died for the church. And a husband leaves his father and mother. Why? Because we're more independent. But we've interpreted that independent sense of responsibility as an arrogance, as a narcissist. And you talk about, and I say, we've kind of been guilty of just saying, you need to be more like a woman, but yet be a man. And we say to men, get in tune with your feminine side. But I always say, when have we said to you women, get in tune with your masculine side? See, the bias against our sons has got to stop. God made us male and female. And Christ asked the question, have you not read he who made them from the beginning, made them male and female? Not wrong, just different. Not any more than pink is wrong for not being blue. Blue's not wrong for being pink. The question is, how do we decode? And there's the deal. When that conflict happens, you think, well, wow, how do you do that at the point of conflict? You may not be able to do it perfectly. Sarah and I don't do it perfectly. I don't want to decode on the crazy cycle when she's chasing me around the house with my book. I don't want a mat. I want to do it. But in the broad brushstrokes, we've got to understand this. If you don't understand the game plan, if you don't understand what's going on, then you're going to take up offense. She's going to take up offense. And the point is, and you'll hear me coach her at the conference, I say, you ladies are writing love notes all the time, but here's the note I want you to write your husband. Use your term of endearment, dear Poochie Poo. I was thinking about you after what I heard Emerson say, that you would literally die for me. That is an overwhelming thought to me. Thank you. And then I say, sign it this way, ladies, with all my respect, the one who still admires you. And just like here at the conference, some men start to bawl. I mean, they tear up. I say, ladies, you need to understand what we feel when we go see The Gladiator or when we go see Saving Private Ryan. We sleep through Sleepless in Seattle. I get that. And say, you ladies want us to show our emotions. We do have emotions. They're just not in the area that you want us to have them in. We tear up over things you don't, and you tear up over things we don't. We're very emotional. But what affects us is in the area of honor, strength, and what? Honor. The Gladiator, remember? Strength and honor. Remember before they go into the arena? Strength and honor. I mean, I wanted to put on a loincloth and jump onto the screen. Well, gentlemen, here's what I want to make sure you don't do. Don't do this. Don't go home and say, hey, honey, I found out why I'm so unloving. Because she's going to say, wow, why? Tell me more. Oh, tell me more. Yeah, this guy was great. He explained exactly why I react in unloving ways. Well, tell me more. Why? Because you're so disrespectful. As a man of honor, here's a word of wisdom. Don't even come close to doing that. Because she won't come to you through the conference, I'll tell you that. Is that the guy? I'm going to kill him, you know. But you don't do that. Now, here's the deal. We've done enough research. I know there's still a percentage of you. You're bitter toward your wife. You're a bitter man. You're bitter toward her. You are bitter. And you're still going to use this information. Men, get this. There will still be at least two or three men here who are going to go home and say that to their wives. Can you believe that? Is that an honorable thing to do? Yes or no? No. And if he's not going to do the honorable thing, then that may suggest why they're having problems. Now, that's one man that I need to really challenge this way. But the rest of us are men of honor. You don't need to go there. What I'm trying to help you do is discover why you react the way you do. We've dismissed that as somehow narcissistic, egotistical. No, God made you that way. But don't use this information right now. What I want you to think about is thinking about decoding, coming to the grips that you're married to this good-willed woman, and she's crying out to you that you have a need. And here's the deal. If she says that you're unloving, just say, honey, forgive me for being unloving. I guess I just felt like you sent a message that you didn't really kind of like who I was, and I reacted. I shouldn't feel that way, but that's what I was feeling. Please forgive me. If you just go that way with this, you're going to see her spirit soften. If you want power, and God has designed women differently. I've been interviewed, I don't know how many women. I was on national TV in Canada, and I was saying, if a man will just turn to his wife and say, honey, I am sorry, will you forgive me? And genuinely do that. And it's contrary to my nature. It's not my nature to do that, and it never will be. This will never be easy. I know this stuff, and I still don't like to do it with Sarah. It'll never be easy. It's never natural. But when I push through as a man of honor, doing the honorable thing that's loving, I say, will you forgive me? I'm sorry for having been unloving or misunderstood your heart there. I see why you're reacting this way, because I matter to you. Women will soften. This interviewer, well-known interviewer there, she literally starts to fall off her chair and said, I'm softening right now. My knees are getting weak right now. If a man said that to me, I would just fall on the floor. I said, there's the proof of the pudding. This is what I'm trying to say. Men, you have power. You don't have to use your power the inappropriate way. Use it by seeking forgiveness. But also, if you are available, come to that conference. I'm going to unpack this for your wife as well. But what you can apply right now is Ephesians 5:33, your side of the equation. God commands you to love. It'll never be natural. It's especially not natural when you're feeling disrespected. But don't conclude your wife is trying to be disrespectful. Conclude instead she's seeking reassurance that you love her. If you lock into that, you'll do the crazy cycle dance every once in a while, but it will not spin out of control. What time are we supposed to be over right now?
1 minute.
1 minute. Okay. Let me just pray for you, and then we'll be dismissed. Lord, we thank you, Abba, Father, for you, in a sense, calling us. Come close, church. Listen to me. Listen to me. And Lord, you have revealed a simple truth. It's just simple. Love and respect. The researchers have found it. Your word revealed it, a truth hidden in plain sight. And we thank you today as men that there's nothing wrong with us, that we serve and we die for honor. That's a deep thing within us. You put it there. That doesn't justify our unloving reactions. But it helps us understand ourselves, and it helps us understand why we misinterpret our wives. Oh, God, through Christ, thank you for this illumination. Thank you for the light bulb moment. In your name we pray. Amen.